But yeah, I got the pro one when I was in Singapore for, it was about 150 off, so.
Oh, that's a pretty decent discount.
Yeah, and it was good. It's really good, and I use it over all the controllers I've been sent.
Oh my god, 35,000 yen, alright.
A lot.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it around about. Player 2 Pixelcast episode 185. I'm your very prepared host. I know all of the things, Tim Henderson. So prepared even that I actually remembered to bring somebody else with me.
Lucky.
Yeah.
A little bit. Just a little podcast,
it could have just like been me and this tin of beer.
The world's worst ASMR.
It's like just listening to me drink wheat beer. Just
yep. Enjoy.
Delightful sounds, I'm sure.
Howdy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got two of us. It's because I said we don't want any mechanics this time around, and people are like, fuck that, I'm all about the gameplay.
Yes, yeah, we want weird shit to muck around with, not quiet moments to reflect.
So, yeah, this episode, now that I'm, like, back and have drunk all the Guinness or whatever, and good job, by the way, Ireland, like, living up to a stereotype there, because, like, walk past the bar and there'd be, like, 10 people around tables, and I swear to God, like, every time, like, 9 of them were drinking Guinness. And there'll be, like, be one person with a cocktail or a different beer or something.
Yes.
That really weak coffee, although, yeah, I got Irish coffee once. And I'm pretty sure it was just whiskey with a little bit of milk mixed in.
Sounds about right, really.
I was like, are you sure you haven't, like, mistakenly given me what you would give the locals? This is... back on topic again. Said topic being, yeah, we're going reverse of what we were doing last week. Last week we were talking about, like, mechanics and gimmicks and whatnot. This time, games that are either light on them or specifically, like, moments where it just works for them to, like, be peeled back or, like, keep it simple and just, like, kind of be in the space or probably get a lot of story-focused stuff, I'm guessing. Which I guess makes a certain amount of sense, because, Huso, according to you, Forza Horizon is now a role-playing game.
Yeah, well, it's more of a revelation I've made as the series has gone on to me. It's not really a racing game anymore. It's more than that. It's different to a racing game. It always has been, but it feels like it's leaning more and more into this car adventure, this car. And you take the role of this driver and you upgrade cars. You have battles, but the battles are races this time. This is my theory anyway, because I feel like they've built this car adventure around an RPG style set of systems. You know, there's all these things that you could find an analog in RPGs with this game, and it really this version, I think particularly, will upset those that want Forza Motorsport. So if you're a hardcore guy that's got the racing wheel and you want the serious sim stuff, I probably would not recommend this to you, because it's just going to upset you. It really is about the fantasy of driving around Japan, taking high-end cars really fast around corners and exploring every nook and cranny of this, quite frankly, amazing map. Trying to live this kind of culture that they're setting up here, and it's done at the best I think they've done it. I think it helps because it's Japan, you know. Like, there's a lot
of that thing that people have wanted for a long time.
There's that, and there's also a lot of inbuilt car culture that people are aware of already, you know, and people have a lot of surface knowledge of Japanese car culture in the drifting and the toge events and things
going
like that.
All the way back to that really bad Fast and the Furious.
Exactly. So people have got this surface level knowledge of it, but they don't have a deeper understanding. And this game does a really good job of, like, being a history teacher and a, like, this excited guy telling you all about stuff. And it's quite charming, actually. You're driving through events and you're getting a little headset from one of your mates going, oh, you know, this is where they had this race and this is where this car was born. And, you know, it's all very giant car nerd with enthusiasm kind of vibes going on. And it really is hard to ignore the joy that they've really brought for this. More so than Mexico to me has never been like a car place, you know? It just, it's not associated in my brain.
It's not really famous for like an automobile industry. It's like people think of Japan, I think electronics and cars in terms of
exactly. So it really works and they've really leaned into it. The maps are Forza maps. So you don't expect accuracy. You expect little chunks of accuracy. So, and then they kind of meld it all into one map. So
like roads in Japan are so fucking narrow. Like if they had done it accurate, the game would be an unplayable nightmare.
Yeah, so they've done it, you know, to the best of their ability, included, you know, famous sites from around the Tokyo area, I guess. You know, they've really made it about exploring and just kind of stumbling on events and finding collectibles, and it's all just this kind of joyous kind of loop where you don't really have to race. You can if you want to. You just kind of cruise. You get cool cars every time you turn around because it's Forza and they just kind of throw cars at you for all sorts of stuff. And yeah, it's really enjoyable. And obviously the driving at this point is nigh on perfect for this sort of game. It straddles that line between pure arcade and sim beautifully. There's a lot of difficulties and adjusters and things like that you can tailor this to you how you want to play. So if you are a sim racer but you want something a bit more lighthearted, it will give you the options to, you know, go right into the nuts and bolts of things if that's what you want to do. And you can do different tunings and all sorts of things to your cars and
but
all those
things. You cannot quite turn it into Forza Motorsport.
You can't turn it into Forza Motorsport. No, this is not a sim racer at all. And the races aren't set up like sim racing. So, yeah, it's not something that you're going to see at esports, for example. But if you just want to fun in a car, there isn't a better game out there. It's plain and simple. The only issue I've got with this game really is that the formula hasn't changed that much over the years. Like, they've added things and improved things. But at this point, you know what you're getting. There's no surprises.
Yeah, that was the impression I got from going over a lot of the reviews. Was like, this is a really good one of these, but we're getting to the point where it is definitely a one of these situation.
It's a one of these, yeah. It's a very, very, very good one of these, and it's a very, very good formula that they've nailed. But I wonder how long they can keep riding this without, you know, mixing things up a bit, you know.
They could release a new they could release a new motorsport. Like, it's been
Yeah.
It's been a minute.
2021, I think that one came out. But anyway, the only other cool thing worth mentioning, it's the first big major event you race a mech. A giant 30-foot mech. That's awesome.
That's why Ken should come back on this show.
And it's based on a 80s anime of some kind.
It's like Gundam or Macross or something I've never heard.
I think it might be Macross. Yeah, but anyway, so they went and got whatever licensing or whatever to do that, and they did. Really cool. Like, if you like Forza at any time, do it. If you even if you've got slight interest in cars, do it. It's on every system now except for the Switch
and the PS5, I believe.
No, not yet. I think it's is it got a delayed? I thought it was launching day and date.
You know what? We should maybe track that. Let's make some great radio and like go to like the PlayStation website and see. I'm pretty sure it's not day and date. Yeah, this is a weird generation for this shit in general, though.
Oh, it hasn't. Yeah, it'll be 6 months. So yeah, okay. So it's not.
I would guess it'll be out in time for Christmas.
Yeah.
I am guessing that you played this on a PC with like a stupidly high-end graphics card and all the RAM in the world and.
So I played it on a whole bunch of things, actually. I played it on the Xbox because they're using the Xbox Play Anywhere thing. So it was an Xbox code that works on your PC. So I used it on the PC. I used it on my Xbox Ally X, and it worked beautifully. I used it on my standard Xbox Series, and it was really nice too. Like 60 frames at 1080 on my handheld. I don't know
how
you can ask.
That's pretty scalable then. Like,
yeah,
even
like
free.
And it has built-in settings for the Ally systems, so it'll automatically recognize that, and I didn't need to tune it in any way at all to get that frame rate. It just automatically picked up what you were doing. Really well-built system, really good benchmarking tools if you're the type of person that wants to tweak every frame out of it.
I'm going to fall down that rabbit hole going, I don't want to tweak every frame, but I'm like going, do I want this or this turned up more?
Yeah,
and then I'm going to like sit there and go, does it hold? Does it hold? Does it hold?
Does it hold? Yeah. And watch the whole race every time it goes through the race to get the frames and everything. But yeah, Some amazing graphics. If you've got the full stick, the ray tracing through Tokyo especially is pretty cool. Lots of lights obviously reflecting on water if it's been raining and all sorts of things. The cherry blossoms are pretty special when you're driving through the cherry blossoms and they kind of kick up around your wheels and things like that. And yeah, it's pretty good looking game. It's hard. You can tell they didn't have to build it for the Xbox this time. The Xbox One, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. They left that behind and you can tell they've used the juice. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it is a little bit ironic that yeah, you're playing the game set very much in Japan. And I'm playing a game, I guess, not actually set in Australia. Come to think of it. Also, you're wearing a Grinspoon shirt, which I feel like in some way should be a segue, but disappointingly it's not.
But bit yeah, early for Grinspoon. Mixtape.
Just a little.
Just a little. Like, 97 was Grinspoon.
So, yeah, I'm going to explain why that would fit in a bit. Like, get back to, like, where we're getting at. So, yeah, the whole reason why I was absent last week is I was basically traveling around Dublin and London and waiting for a key for Mixtape to, like, show up. I had one hell of a trip home. So I left London at around 7:30 in the evening.
Yeah.
Flew to Copenhagen. About a two-hour layover. That's fairly standard stuff if you don't have, you know, a direct flight home. You're going to go to the city wherever the airline you're with is based and then, like, change to the main. That was normal. Whatever. Do that. Actually went fairly smoothly. Flew to Seoul.
Okay.
This is what I had to do to make my flight affordable because for whatever reason, flying from Japan to Ireland / the UK was stupid expensive, but flying from Seoul was still expensive, but not completely insane to the point where buying a separate ticket
to Seoul
and from Seoul was still noticeably cheaper. It's been cheaper enough to like buy a nice pair of noise canceling headphones or something is like,
yeah.
But that was like an 8 or 9 hour layover then as a result. And like got into town just as all the restaurants were shopping, were shutting as well.
Yep.
Finally get back into Japan at like 5 o'clock in the fucking morning. Kind of like stagger home, collapse asleep for 3 hours enough to get up and go out to work, evening shift. Get home, finally get a message from Paul saying, hey, you still want to review Mixtape? Got a PS5 key. And I was like, yes. Sure, I will get on it first thing tomorrow.
Yep.
And it's like, tomorrow, maybe hold off like claiming the key because I might want to use it. And I'm like, whatever. It turns out at some point, like I was so bleary eyed, I did not realize at some point, probably during that Korean layover, I had actually been sent a Switch 2 key.
Oh, okay.
Interesting though, because I had also said I was okay with PC. So they sent me a Switch 2 key even though I said I was okay with PC. So generous of them, I guess, if like a little bit of backdoor of how this normally works. If you say that PC is okay, in general experience, you are getting a PC key.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, alright, I'm going to activate this. I'll send Paul the Switch 2 one.
Yep.
I was like, okay, activate it. Like, I'm going to play this in the afternoon. I just I need to go to bed. I am like literally dead to the world.
Yep.
But that 3 hour nap I mentioned, I mean, I needed that nap to function at work. Like but it also meant that then I went to bed probably at like 10 o'clock and then woke up at like 2 or 3 a.m.
Yep.
And could not get back to sleep. My body was like, fuck you, buddy. You've had somewhere in the 7 to 8 hour range.
Yeah. The joys of international travel.
Yeah. So I went from during that flight because our Mixtape had not actually arrived. I actually played through a lot of Life is Strange.
Yep.
Finished it. Pretty good. Very good handheld game. Like, if we want to go back to that episode, excellent choice of handheld game. But I eventually just fuck it. I'm like just get up at like 5 o'clock or something. So I give up. I'm going to start playing Mixtape. 2 minutes later, I'm immediately in love with this game. I'm like bleary tired out of my eyes. Also, I am very, very, very sorry. Life is Strange. Like, but you cannot write teenage dialogue. And it is not the sort of thing I'd be like hanging as like a high bar for a game like Mixtape. It was like, oh, right, this is how teenagers speak.
Well, at least we did when we were that age.
I'm about to say, this is the unfair advantage that yep. Beethoven and Dinosaur, the developers, have, is like, this game is set at the end of the 90s. So they are writing their own generational teenage banter, which probably does make it a little bit easier.
Yep.
Or maybe even a lot easier. And the reason I say late 90s is... Oh my gosh, like, step back and say what this game is. It's called Mixtape, and it's unlike their previous, also excellent game, which had a very stupid title, though. Mixtape makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You're effectively mostly playing as... I want to say her name is Stacy, I've forgotten. Annoyingly, an American in somewhere in North California, and I don't know, but I'm presuming it's set there because PR told them to, like, during the pitching process, they had to set it in America, is my guess. I would have loved it if this game was set in, like, out of Melbourne suburbs or something.
Yeah.
So you're playing as her, and, like, basically the whole premise is you and a couple of your friends, you're trying to basically get booze on the way to, like, this beach party at the end of the night, which will be her last night in the area before she flies out to New York to meet some famous Hollywood audio producer person. Because she wants to, her lifelong dream is to be a music supervisor, which I had to Google, check Wikipedia, it is a real thing. Effectively, it is a professional mixtape maker for Hollywood. Or at least, that's what exists in her brain, is what it is. It's like, know your music, create a good licensed score. The thing that she's probably not thinking of is that I imagine there's a lot of legalese and licensing issues and shit that come with that. Which I am sure is not an act, like, her naivety has to be intentional. There is no way that they made this game. They are aware of it. Like, Beethoven and Dinosaur have to be 199% aware of the shit that deals with, like, licensing music scores just by the nature of what this game is. Also, she basically has not organized a meeting with this person. This is where it gets weird and creepy and kind of admirable for the late 90s at the same time. Is she's basically been stalking this person and has bought a flight to New York because she knows this person's favorite coffee shop and she knows that person is going to be there and she's just going to plan to, like, run into her and pass her an example of a mixtape. So this is the sort of, like, blissful, ignorant 90s dreamlike behavior that just cannot exist anymore.
It feels like Empire Records or one of those movies like that.
It is, you know, a little bit like Empire Records minus... This is her version of going to Vegas and, like, betting the entire record store on it. So, yeah, and she's abandoning, like, a road trip she'd planned with her friends a couple of weeks later in order to, like, follow this. That dreaminess alone, the fact that you could do stupid shit like that in itself feels stupid 90s.
Yeah.
But she's effectively made a mixtape of their last night. She's curated all the tracks that all lead up to this beach party. And so the game literally goes from track to track, and quite often she will verbally tell you what each track is. And I think it's the third one is Freak by Silverchair.
Nice.
So this is how I dated it in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Because disturbingly, I was alive to remember that shit.
That was 97 as well.
I want to say. Yeah. So yeah, Grinspoon would have been possible.
Would have just been in there, yeah.
Would have just...
American appeal that Silverchair did with Freak. That was actually pretty big in the States, that one.
Yeah, it's been weird watching the Discord around this game and, like, a lot of lack of awareness that is Australian developed.
Yeah.
A lot of people, like, being upset at, like, it's like, oh, it's just a very American version of things, but also, like, how to explain this is, like, I moved from Australia to London back in 2006 and actually ended up working in an HMV, which now that it has since gone basically almost defunct, I guess I need to explain, I was in the game sector, but it was, like, mostly a music store. And the thing that I very quickly came to notice there is, like, more so than Australia, it seems like the UK, and I'm guessing a lot of the rest of the world, really does break... Music tastes and preferences break down way more strongly in genres. I noticed this in the radio when I was there as well. Like, so growing up in the Blue Mountains, which was effectively Sydney as far as radio stations were concerned, yep. You know, you had Triple M, which at the time was like nothing but rock. Although even yep. It eventually cracked and just became like the Manly Man version of the Today FM.
Yeah.
But in fact, all the radio stations were just like playing pop music and like trying to like out-edgy each other. Went to the UK and it's like every radio station was like genre themed. which to me was very, very strange. I've seen a whole bunch of people going, I don't understand. Like, this doesn't seem like a logical sense of taste for anybody. And I'm like, growing up in Australia, it's like, she's wearing a Rage t-shirt at one point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which, according to Jaikul, is apparently the most difficulty they had in licensing anything, which I find, like, mildly hilarious.
And completely understandable, knowing the ABC.
But between, like, Rage and Triple J, but even that crappy commercial radio.
Yeah.
Like, it makes perfect sense that, like, genres would bend. And also the lead character, like, wants to be a professional music curator, if I can. Yeah. Like,
so it's going to be eclectic.
It's going to be eclectic, and people complaining that it's not all 90s or some of it's kind of older. The only rule that makes sense is that it can't have not existed yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So anything up until the 90s goes, and, like, they've done a brilliant job of, like, just choosing their tracks. Like, it's a fucking excellent mixtape.
Yeah.
When you put all the stuff together. The thing that's probably caused a lot of the backlash, though, is that, like, it's not deeply interactive.
No.
Or at least the interactivity is not challenging in any meaningful way. This is a 100% vibes game. And it is a really fucking good vibes game. I cannot stress how well they nail all of it and how, like, it actually feels excellent the whole way. Johnny Galvatron. Is his name actually Johnny Galvatron?
No idea.
But yeah, from the Galvatrons, whatever.
Yeah.
They clearly understand that, like, this is not compressed DOS MP3 files that they're playing here. Like, this game sounds fucking fantastic. And they've, like, just got the visuals down pat, like, got stop motion animation. It looks incredible. It's on Unreal Engine 5. It's one of very, very few Unreal Engine 5 games that I had to check, because normally, like, you're just looking at it, that's Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this game looks incredible. It has its own look. But it is mostly like a series of vignettes. You're kind of like bouncing between, like, your houses, like In Search of Alcohol. Again, this is the end of school, so this is how you know that, like, they're forced to set in America. Because at the end of school, there's somebody, one of your friends in Australia, is going to be able to legally get you booze.
Yep. Yeah.
Probably half of you at least, actually.
Yeah.
So, yes, a lot of it's just this quest to find alcohol before you get to this beach party. The word universal has been used maybe a little too much, and I guess it's like a Western universal thing. I mentioned, I think specifically in my review, that I never stole a shopping trolley and, like, just rode it down a hill, but, like, fuck, I'm sure I know somebody who has.
Oh, yeah.
Last Christmas, I
did it, but I'm pretty sure I pushed someone.
The thing is, even if I never saw it, I've been in the orbit of that happening. Like, such to say, the sort of stupid shit that a 16 to 19 year old is going to do.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, like, even when I was in Canberra briefly over Christmas, like, that's a couple of stray shopping trolleys where they should not be. What do you think people were doing with them? And it's a great bit because, like, one of the early, playable vignettes, I guess. Also just, like, beautiful, like, because it is like vignette, like, cut together, it doesn't have to be a cohesive world that you traverse before, so everything can be downhill when it needs to be. It's fucking awesome. There's a bit where you're basically escaping the cops in a shopping cart.
Nice.
You end up in a highway and it, like, switches to, like, this, like, road cam, police chase type camera. And this is awesome, like, the guy doing, like, the voiceover for the track report going, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I swear, this is only the fifth or sixth time I've seen this happen. I'm going, yep, perfect.
This week.
that sequence is awesome, because if you've played the Artful Escape, you'll know that the environments get very expressive, and they do a very good job. Maybe not quite as good as the Artful Escape, but that game was all about that, of, like, you know, the environment's effectively turning into fireworks, metaphorically speaking, into stuff. So it's like that and a lot of, like, recent history flashbacks. And kids are, like, 17 years old or something, so of course it's all recent history. So, like, one of them is literally just your, like, mixing flavors in a slushy machine.
Right.
And, you know, there's no right or wrong way to do it. There's just, like, 8 fucking flavors, and you move the cup around and you, like, mix them all together. And I'm like, I don't know if I've done it with slushies. I've definitely done it with, like, the free drink bar in an all-you-can-eat restaurant, though.
So I've seen my kids do it at 7-Eleven, so, yep, it happens.
And then, yeah, another one I referred to, which is just, like, running through a field where the game, and the reason it stuck to me probably is because that game always turns into a journey at that point, because it's like, you just, like, jump and That's a wholesome one, is it turns into Journey. The other one is, I remember a friend in London, I don't know what they're on, MDMA or something, and they were talking about, like, trying to catch a bus, and they were, like, running after this thing high as a kite, and they could swear that when they were jumping, like, 20 feet into the air, like, chasing this thing. So, yeah, these kids either have innocent, happy memories, or they were just fucking high.
Yep.
But that whole sequence just feels great to play, and it is a little bit Journey-esque. There are, like, pockets of wind that, like, kind of, like, blow you along. People made a fuss about this scene where you rewind a cassette tape with a pencil.
Yeah.
And it's I guess it's a little bit weird that you actually rewind the whole cassette with a pencil.
Instead of just getting the tape straight and putting it in the machine.
Because I mean, I get what they're going for. Like, they probably could have been like, maybe the tape was just a bit like jammed. Because, you know, it's when player like screws it up and then you take it out. But the thing is, everybody's done that. Everybody knows that a pencil fits perfectly in there. And it goes around. But yeah, just in terms of like, just capturing a vibe, scoring it perfectly. And, you know, the game is short, like beautifully, beautifully short. This is, you know, an overstuffed Hollywood movie in length. And yeah. I say that as if, like, not every movie in Hollywood these days is overstuffed. You know, this is a Lord of the Rings movie in length.
Yep.
And just so long as you don't expect fucking Elden Ring from it. It is.
I've got it downloaded to play. I haven't had a chance yet, but yeah.
I am looking forward to it. Make sure your, like, audio system is, like, just fully set up.
Yeah, I'll probably do it on these.
It is, yeah, it is wild how good it actually sounds. Like, that was the thing. Like, when I put this down, I probably helped that I was also super sleepy because I started playing one day. I did actually have to finish it the next because I just could not physically. Like, I got up at fucking 4 or 5 in the morning, played it, had to go to work, came back and just collapsed, and then got up again at like 3 or 4 in the morning or something. Finished it, started writing the review, and then just like lay in bed listening to music for like 2 hours. And this is like the main thing that that strikes me, especially this game, is that it's not nostalgic about the 90s per se. I mean, it's not even super specific about when in the 90s it is. There are no DVDs or anything, but like the only reason I can like put a date on it is that Silverchair song.
Yep.
And even then, that's probably not intentional. It's just like, it came out in the 90s, it'll pass.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, that entire sequence is just like rock out. You're just pressing a button in the car and while you're like headbanging and like playing with the lights and like the fucking lock on the door. Is that it's nostalgic to this idea of like this shit mattering.
Yep.
Like, it's nostalgic to like Spotify having not fucking turned music into content, like just ground it into like this paste. About like each song or like just each piece of art in any superficial sense of the word being special. And it kind of returned that sparkle for me for a couple of days, and that alone earns it a fucking A score.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing that people like me discovered when they started buying vinyls again. That, you know what? Listening to someone's intentional placement of music is way better than listening to some random collection of songs that an AI algorithm's put together for you.
Yeah.
You know, Smashing Pumpkins, which I know are in the mixtape, listening to a Smashing Pumpkins album is designed to listen from start to finish. Like, they're not a hit-making band, they're a concept album making band.
They had
a
few hits, though, but yeah.
Yeah, they had a few hits, but it's like the journey you go on for the album, so that sort of thing. So I really appreciate that now more than I even did as a kid, so yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's really special. There's been some stupid discourse around it.
Yeah.
Some criticisms have been like fairer than others. Like, mostly I think, yeah, we should have been a bit more careful with the word universal when it's probably universally Western, perhaps.
Yep.
But man, it really captures a vibe. And like, again, like I keep on seeing these stories, and in my heart of hearts, like they're true about like, you know, the younger generations are kind of like starting to shun a lot of tech these days.
Certainly, cloud-based tech. Anyway, stuff that's not tangible.
Yeah, it'd be very interesting to see how the real 17-year-olds of today react to this game.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to serve them this reality that they just never got to experience.
Yeah.
It's pretty special. I think it's going to, like, go in a loop and probably, like, bubble up again at a lot of the Game of the Year lists at the end of 2026.
And upset all the cranky ones again.
And yeah, we'll have another shit show on our hands.
Yeah.
It'll probably win like the Games of Change or something at the Game Awards, which it probably shouldn't win because that's not what it's going for in the same sense as some other stuff is.
Could win writing
then,
or
but,
story.
And then people
or
get upset for the wrong reason though.
Yeah.
But then with that, yeah, we're gonna take a break. I'm gonna suggest that while we take a break, you go and buy and download Mixtape. And when we come back, a topic that it may possibly have been a little bit influenced by this said game about using a slushy machine or walking through a video store drunk. God, I want like Microsoft Edge to die in a fire. it can exist quietly in the background. I just don't want to be forced to use it, I think.
Fair.
Is a thing. But you know, I should be passive. I should be chill. I should be like pulled back because, yeah, we are going to focus on, you know, again, as I mentioned up front, like kind of the antithesis of last time's episode. Instead of all about the mechanics and the way you interact with things and what hoozle, hazle, hazle, bangle, boogle, 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 I'm just that, I don't know how to make words up anymore. I did drink a pint of beer before this. kind of like going in the opposite direction to like when like mechanics are like really peeled back, but like moments or entire games perhaps like managed to be like super special. Regardless, obviously, I went through a whole bunch of the pre-show. Like making, you know, there's not much to like making slushies. Like you move the cup around and like put the flavor in, and that's it. And but so you have told me you've actually prepared.
I do have some games in mind.
Where are you going?
I feel like, considering you brought this topic up, I'm going to jump your gun and say Journey.
Yep. Damn it.
It's like I know you. But yeah, it was honestly the first thing I thought of, like a mechanically simple game that is better for that simplicity. It's kind of a state of flow that you get into of very simple mechanics. And
I wish I could find which podcast it was again. I think with Geneva Chen, the designer on it again, like talking about how they got there and like the characters used to have arms. So when the characters have arms, people expect to be able to punch and like push and had to take them away. And it was way better for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first thing that came to my mind when we got to talking or got to thinking about this kind of simplicity that makes the game better, taking away things instead of adding things, which is generally against what you feel major publishers do these days, that it's all about adding, not subtracting.
God.
Yeah.
Take note, Ubisoft. I mean, there are some like mechanics in Journey. There's like a whole still section, like whatever. But like, it's distilled perfectly in that horizontal scene that is very, very famous at this point, where it's just you like sliding down the sand with this like pitch perfect golden sunrise behind you, and it just captures this vibe, and it's just chef's kiss, just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I think along the Journey lines. They're different in a way, but also I think they evoke similar sort of feelings. There's stuff like Dear Esther, Firewatch. They call them walking simulators, but they're
it
like...
It sucks that we never came up with a better name.
They're interactive stories, as far as I'm concerned. They're just an interactive story. They're very simple to play. Anyone could play them. It's all about the writing and the setting and how they capture those kind of moments in the story with the very simple gameplay elements. So stuff like Firewatch is probably the most notable one in that kind of bunch for me anyway. There were a lot for a period, but I think Firewatch is probably the better of the lot of them.
I'd say Edith Finch is probably the best of them, and that's got... Yeah, without having much of the way mechanics, especially that, like, and I should say that when I say, like, yeah. I fear that I may have used the word awesome. Maybe, maybe I didn't, but, like, we're just, like things that, like, make you stand, like, yeah. to kind of stand out, like, resonate on some level. Because I'm thinking of the bathtub scene when, like, you're basically playing this drowning baby.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, all the scene direction and everything, and yet, it does get as dark as I just said there. But it's fucking surreal, and it pulls it off and is, like, super harrowing, and there's not a whole lot you're really doing there outside of, you know, making some toys, like, float around.
Yeah. Those simple moments that are more than just a cutscene, that little slice of interactivity can really add to it in the right hands, I think.
Yeah. Again, going back to mixtape, that's probably why, like, those small yeah. little things work. I'm going to jump your gun now, Huso, because I was yeah. like, which is the... Like, the one I think is probably overlooked, but is also one of the most famous turning points in video games, is the entire opening of Half-Life.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, really. Both, actually, Half-Life 1 and 2, they have this kind of slow intro that has been copied since. Like, Bioshock copied it in that sort of same way, especially Bioshock Infinite. You go a whole bunch of time without doing anything, you know. And your feelings on that game beside, it's better for that intro, I think. But yeah, Half-Life, the way you're just going to work, you're on the train.
Wild how ballsy that game actually really was for its time. Like,
especially because first-person shooters at that time were boomer shooters. There was no
Doom.
Others.
Like, literally, like, there were Doom clones until Half-Life came out, basically.
Essentially, yeah. Then you had Half-Life and Deus Ex kind of... Not too far apart, but that was when it stopped being boomer shooters and started being, you know, more.
Created two completely different rails.
Yeah.
But yeah, for like any, I can't believe like it's old enough now I have to like point out for anybody who hasn't played Half-Life, because they are out there. You really yep. are just on this kind of like cart monorail type thing.
Yep.
Just on your way to work, you're getting the safety announcements, whatever. Somebody's complaining about their microwave dinner, which you may or may not have been responsible for. And he's just going through the routine of being at work for like, it must be like 20 minutes.
It's a fair while, yeah.
Until eventually shit hits the fan and it actually turns into a first-person shooter.
Yep.
But the sheer level of confidence that they must have had in that.
It was a ballsy move. There's a lot of Half-Life is a ballsy move, so it could have not paid off, but...
It has yeah. paid off and forever, because look at Steam now, like...
Steam only exists because of Half-Life 2, so.
I mean, Half-Life 2 had a very good intro as well. Wouldn't call yep. it quite as ballsy. It was kind of an established thing that worked.
Yep. Yep.
At that point. But there are also, like, I think there's just certain moments where, like, you don't need to do anything more in a game to move forward. So I've also mm-hmm. got, like, written down setting sail coming home. I don't know if that evokes exactly what I'm trying to get at for you.
Setting sail.
It's like the very end when you're just walking through Bastion. As all this kind of
yeah.
comes
again. Yep.
Because all you're doing is walking.
Yep. Yeah, there's lots of moments. Actually, I think even in big AAA, I think there's certain studios that do that pretty well. You're just kind of moving forward while things are going around. I think there's a couple instances in Uncharted, you know.
I have a note saying, does petting llamas count as like a mechanic? Because like... That is yeah. the shit that stood out. That is what lasted from Uncharted 2 was this downtime in this village, and all you were doing was like petting. And I don't think it was llamas. I forgot what animal. Maybe they were yaks. You were petting some big animal.
I think the most notable of all of those is the music shop scene in Last of Us Part 2. And you can miss that completely. But if you go in with Ellie and I've
you
forgotten
just play
her
the
name.
Guitar.
And she, not even that, but like the playing guitar part is also very cool, but the kind of just exploring this record shop and kind of getting a slice of history, that's something that series does really well in between the very dark and harrowing rest of it. but yeah, so those moments are quiet, I think, in a game like Last of Us or Uncharted or even God of War. You know, they're really important. It's a type
of world building that no other medium can really do quite the same way.
Like I always think of one of my favorite scenes in games is Kratos going back to get the Blades of Chaos in the first, well, not the first God of War, but the first reboot one. So you know, and that's very close to a cutscene. There is a little bit of interactivity, but yeah, it's pretty special in a game that's all about, you know, pretty much
throwing an axe
slaughter
and shit, having it back at you.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of emotion in a little section there that you don't expect from, well, especially you didn't expect knowing Kratos' history.
No, this is not necessarily a repeatable moment, but like the sort of stuff that happens, like part of why Shenmue still remains super special to me is I will always just remember this. It's like stuck in my brain. Like, it could happen to everybody, it could not. I forgot what the actual story reason for you being awake so fucking early in the morning is. It may have been because you'd just like been sneaking into a warehouse number 8 or whatever. But there's a point where you're like in the local area and you like see this guy like just like walking home. He looks completely beat. And that may have just been luck of the animation.
Yeah.
But like he's the dude who worked like the midnight shift at the convenience store. And there's this like just sense that like, holy shit, like, there's like this cool little detail of like this world is like just waking up and this guy's going to sleep and like just create this whole sense of, again, world building. Like, it's like almost non-moment that kind of like makes it special when the like sense that these things are happening around you.
Yeah, like feeling in a world that's alive is very different to being the star of the show, I think. And that can really add to that sort of... you know, those special moments. There's one, it's A Way Out, which is the two-player one, the co-op where you play two prisoners. What's-his-face's first one? Not his first one, but...
Yeah, the Mad Oscars Bugger guy. That's just called him. Joseph something?
Joseph Fares, yeah, that's it. Yeah,
teamwork, so, got there.
But, you know, and it is built around a mechanic of two players sharing the same screen. But a lot of that game is just... living in a prison, like it's just kind of being a part of what's going on in this world that you're in, and obviously you're building towards getting out and escaping. But a lot of that game, you're kind of just seeing what life's like in there, and the game's better for it because it's not action, it's not puzzles all the time. It's just getting the feel for the world you're in.
But like. You've been institutionalized, man.
Yeah. Brooks was here. Sorry, I watched Shawshank the other day.
This is a very good movie. We'll have to say though, yeah, for in terms of like those, how to say this, for like the potent just walking through shit, you have to give like this is the fertile ground for the military game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which can also like be completely fucked up. So I actually wrote down press X to pay your respects, lol mo. That was some of the dumbest shit ever.
There was at the end of Ace Combat Assault Horizon, you wide a fist bump. Press Y to fist
bump. That makes more sense. Yeah. Because that's already dumb, so that kind of works. Not this deep, troubling, harrowing moment of like respect and like reflection. But yeah, it is like it may mean that like the no Russian moment in God 2 like deserves a mention where like you're just like you can if you want to, but you're like kind of like, well shit, I've infiltrated this terrorist clique and we're walking around an airport just fucking shooting everybody. And that got played to death. Like it got to a point for a while where every Call of Duty game had to have an equivalent of that, and that undermined the entire
the impact of it.
I'd say the more significant one though is actually like the white phosphorus in Spec Ops: The Line.
Yeah, I was just thinking that when you said military.
And you're just like walking through the town going, what, this is really fucked up.
Yeah. Very, very few games have used a war setting in that way that Spec Ops: The Line did. And that's the moment that everything changes.
Yeah, that's like, well, yeah, all right. Because I mean, I get like kind of because people get like you don't have to show us this. Why do you have to show us this? We know war is bad. It's like, well, you know, in a textbooky kind of way, but like
Yeah.
People know a lot of things are bad. Look where the world is politically right now. Clearly, they need to be confronted with it a little bit. Like, art needs to step its game up here.
Yeah, then that's the reason. It's in a, like, something like American History X, a movie. People know it. That's a hard watch. That's a hard movie to watch. But, like, it's something I would suggest that everyone watch at least once, you know, no matter how hard it is. It's especially in this day and age when the Nazis seem to be coming back. Maybe some more people need to watch that shit, but you know,
we're having that conversation. We can't just say, "Well, I know that the Nazis are the bad guys." It's like,
maybe you should see some Nazis doing some Nazi shit. You know,
see but, where this road ends. Like,
yeah,
see where this is going.
Yeah, yeah. I think games have a unique power to impact people because of that interactivity. It's just not used as often as I would perhaps like. Maybe it's not commercially wise or...
Well, no, like at some point you got boardrooms and lowest common denominators and you don't want to upset anybody when you... because these games have gotten too expensive to make.
Yeah.
Like this shit needs to get rolled back. You can't be spending $300 million making a video game. That's silly.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does take the art. The art becomes a boardroom decision at that point, so... And you can't make art by committee. You just can't.
Generally not. Unless you're a band.
Yeah, maybe. Even then, there's always someone that's the boss.
Someone whose vision is leading this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Although speaking of like super hyper big budget shit, the one that I managed to miss, and I will still be angry about this forever because I did not want to play the whole game again, but the Crossing into Mexico Red Dead Redemption is something that everybody brings up.
Yeah, this is a really good moment.
And I just didn't get it. Like, I think I just, like, found some way to break the story and...
Yeah, it is a very good moment. That game in general is full of... Actually, Red Dead 2 is even better of quiet moments. Like, there's a really cool mission where you take a kid fishing. And...
Yeah.
That's
actually, awesome. That's the sort of shit that, like, can really stand out is, like...
The- yeah. Like, and there's this kind of, you're taking this kid fishing in amongst all this other bad stuff going around because you know, even though you're the gruff bad guy, you know, the kid needs a bit of attention. So the whole purpose is to, you know, make the kid feel a bit better in the only way this messed up cowboy knows how to do it. And so he takes him fishing. So, you know, there's stuff like that in that game. And it's all through the Red Dead games. Number two is a really good place to just, it's a game I like to just exist in. And see things and ride the horse and not necessarily do the missions. It's a really well built world. I won't say it's their best game, but it's a really, really well built world.
Yeah, it's a shame you're not going to get another one for 20 years at the rate.
Yeah, It is a shame. We'll get three versions of the current one though.
Yeah, we'll get a PS6 version. That's like when they announce like the next Xbox or PlayStation. Like the first thing you're gonna fucking see is like super super crazy 8K Arthur Morgan's face.
Yep. Yeah, but it's really good at it.
And you can also like just like have just these moments of kind of intensity by doing something with you. I'm guessing you have not played Metal Gear Solid 4.
No, I haven't.
But there's just like one point where you're like basically crawling through what is effectively like a microwave oven for people or something. And all you're doing is like mashing the X button.
Yep.
And I could not tell you like how important it is, how hard you mash that thing, but I'm pretty sure I almost destroyed my DualShock 3 controller. Over the course of like just getting to the end of that scene, just because like the framing and like the ridiculousness of the situation and like everything was like so, so beefed up.
It wouldn't be me talking if I didn't mention Alan Wake too. I was
wondering when something Remedy was gonna like.
It's the arty singing.
Oh, that's pretty great, actually.
Yeah.
Was it like a retirement home or something?
Yeah, and he's singing for and then you and if you're a fan of Remedy like me, you make the connection that arty is the janitor from Control and. That the picture of the hut that he's living in is actually in his office in Control. So, you know, all these connections start playing in for the people that are, you know, love their games. But also at the same time, it's just a really fun scene with this quirky dude singing. And yeah.
Well, that's one of the things that games can do is where like just something weird can be happening.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that in movies. You have to, like, frame it and, like, decide when that scene ends.
Yep. But he's just there in the background. And, you know, the people that know who Artie is, or no one really knows who Artie is, but, you know, it's cool. It's just such a cool scene.
You've actually reminded me of something that I had not written down, which is the fact that you can sit there and watch the entirety of How to Kill a Mockingbird with your girlfriend in the darkness.
Yep. What did it did that recently? High on Life did that recently with some really dodgy B movies. You know, because that game was all about silly humor. And,
yeah, so like that game could not have the same poignancy.
No. But there was absolutely the opportunity to watch this dodgy ass shit with Paul Walker from when he was like 15. These actual like Babes and Dinosaurs or something it was called, or some weird thing that actually came out. But yeah, you could watch that at the cinema.
It sounds like some straight to video shit from before videos actually existed. Like,
yep. Yeah, that's that old school Hallmark terrible crap.
Oh, no, Hallmark would have been much more
soppy,
sun drenched and like autumn foliage, even if it's the middle of winter. And
yep.
One thing that came to mind recently, probably because it ties in a little bit to a fairly new release game, is one of the most mechanic-y games ever in Returnal.
Yes.
So you'd be like, and it is what, like, that is a non-stop, until you find this fucking house in the middle of, like, this weird jungle.
Yep.
And those sequences are awesome, because you don't know what the fuck, there's just a house, there's just, like, fuck. I mean, as you go, and you go in there, and it switches to first person, and the entire game changes to just this first person exploration.
Like, it feels like a, what, Become of Edith Finch or something like that.
Yeah, and it's incredibly scripted. Like, you cannot, like, your guns are away, there are no lasers coming at you.
Yep.
And it's just like, what has changed this time? What is weird? And clearly, it becomes apparent after a couple of visits, like, this was your house back on Earth. And you have some unresolved issues that are going to, like, go through some weird circles in this house.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. And the game is better for it, frankly. Like, that game, something that so far when I played, I've been playing a little bit of Soros, is missing that same kind of mysteriousness.
Yeah. I think, like, Pragmata recently does a beautiful job at using little things. Like, you can play hide and seek with the little robot girl in between missions.
That's adorable. That is sickening. My teeth hurt. That is so sweet.
Yeah. But, you know, she goes, I want to play hide and seek. And she's got these crayons and she draws you a picture and you get to look at the picture and, you know, all these kind of things in between, you know, death by robot in the missions. You've got this kind of quiet moments where you're in your little home base with her and she's just kind of learning to be a girl in a lot of ways, like learning to be a kid. And, yeah.
The potential for like being in a home base of any sort in a game.
Yeah.
It didn't bring that many pull it off, but like it's definitely a possibility space that I guess I wish was used a bit more because I don't have a ton of examples coming up in my head, and I feel like there should be.
Yeah, you would think so. Even Destiny did it. Destiny 2 has this little home base where you can just go and play soccer. Like this little soccer field. And, you know, there's a ball. Like it's bad soccer because it's not a soccer game. But, you know, you can go and kick the ball and there's other people there and kick the ball around and do silly things. And yeah, I don't mind that. Those little things are nice. In between, intense gameplay, I think, is better when it's broken up. If it's not broken up.
Is a thing.
Yeah. If it's not broken up, it just becomes like white noise a lot of the time. You know, if you're playing a boomer shooter, for example, that's all just full on. Yes, you feel like this is fun, but you don't remember it. You don't remember individual parts.
No,
there
was like, well, my heart rate accelerated and I think I had fun, but like that was all a blur.
Yeah, it is a blur and you can't remember it. And then a year down the track, you struggle to remember the name of the game. But yeah, I think pacing and these moments in games are so important to the really good games have got it worked out. I've got it worked out really well. The recent one I'm playing right now is Mouse PI. And there's in between, like it is essentially a boomer shooter, but it leans very heavily into this. It knows it's a cartoon without breaking the fourth wall. It's kind of like Roger Rabbit sort of feel in a lot of the interactions. You know, there's this feeling that he knows he's in a cartoon. But also in between the missions, there's like you go to the bar and you talk to in the very noir way, you talk to the reporter and you can go and play cards there or something like that, which has no bearing on the game at all. But yeah.
actually being is in highly stressful game situations, allowing your character to sit down and have a drink is like one of my favorite things to do. When it's like Mafia 2 is now coming to mind. Like, would just go to the bar on the way home from mission in that game.
Yep.
And like just order whatever the fuck was available at the bar, I guess, or whatever. Just like, and like, it kind of built things up a bit. Like, it felt like a little bit more complete, I guess, because
it feels a bit more real, I guess, especially in that situation. Like, people that like go through these situations.
Life happens around the edges, and it's like good to have shit that reminds you of that.
Yeah. And the Mafia games did that really, do that, all of them do it really well. The actual getting from point to point in Mafia, it has its own point. And that's to be in this world. Less so with Mafia 3 because it went full open world, but the other games, you know, the driving to the mission, it's part of the gameplay. It's part of, but it's very simple. You're just doing it to kind of warm yourself up.
But it's also not full of like a litter of icons or something.
No, no, you're just driving. Like the most recent one does it perfectly. You know, you're just going from point A to B. There's no exploration. You don't need to explore. If you want, you can. Why bother? Just take the road trip for what it is before the shit hits the fan.
Maybe get drunk and hope it doesn't like give you a blurry effect on the screen.
Yeah.
Finally getting beyond the screens, like one I'm E&Ring a little bit about is like thinking about how I used to play traditional classic adventure games, like you know your point and clicks are in. And like what I've written down here is figuring out an adventure game puzzle when you're actually supposed to be focused on whatever it was you were doing in class at the time. Like, I'm sure I solved a couple of things in Broken Sword while I was in like World Studies or something.
Yeah, yeah. Just try and click everything on the screen. That's what I used to do.
Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes I find ways to stop that from working. You have to think it through.
The old Sam and Max solution. Use Max on everything. It was funny, if
that
anything.
Game was so good.
If it was wrong, it was still funny. Yeah, I mean, the newer adventure stuff, like Telltale stuff, probably falls into this. It's pretty, you know, really. And
it's just choosing conversation options, really.
Yeah, and the Supermassive games, you know, the horror, cheesy B-grade horror ones that, like Until Dawn and things like that.
They put a few more gimmicky things there, like, you know, hold thing to not breathe, and I think there's some too many, my impression, stealth sections have been like put into the last one. But definitely, again, Life is Strange and that sort of stuff would definitely have like moments. Obviously, like it really just comes down from like knowing these characters and then
and how you want to see the story like, play out until you realize it doesn't. That's just smoke and mirrors.
Oh man, I kind of respect Telltale for that. Like when one of the former developers came up and just straight up said,
we
would put text there saying this character will remember that. Like nothing happened, but we noticed that the playtesting audience like reacted pretty strongly to it. So.
Funny stuff.
Shit worked. I'm pretty sure I felt bad about Clementine at least once.
Yep. Most people did.
I'm going to say we've actually like hit quite a few things there, though.
We have.
I bet the second we hang this up, I'm going to think of like five more.
Oh, absolutely. It's always the way.
That's how it works. The second you're not rolling anymore, like it's like, yep, should have said that. It's a George Costanza thinking of a comeback. Like on the trip home, it's like, that's what I should have said. Immediately turn the car around.
Yeah.
I'm just going to use all the 90s references this episode. Mixtape has allowed it.
Actually, one more. The start of Mass Effect 2, where you're in the ship and you're walking around and everything blows up. I think that's a really great way. It's also along the Half-Life lines of, you know.
It's also just an elegant way to let you use a character creator again.
It is. It really is. It's a very, very clever way to go, hey, your skills are shit again. Time to redo them all. Yeah.
Like, how many times can we, like, pull this off? Can we pull them up again in episode 3?
Very clever.
God, that was, like, 2010. It's, like, 16 years ago.
Yep. 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 Yep.
Think about how old your kids were. Your kid at that point, maybe, actually was.
Yes, only... yeah, no, two. Both kids were born. One just. My youngest is 2009, so, yeah.
Just squeaked out. All right, that's a weird visual image. I wish I hadn't said that. Less visual images, though. Huso, site is still rolling?
Site is rolling. It's rolling nicely, actually.
Do we have any big stuff coming up? We
got Forza up there.
Like, who's on Bond? Who's on Bond? That's
we're trying to fight for code. We might not get it yet. I don't know. We're trying to get one.
all right. That's where we're at with Bond.
Where we're at with Bond. But, yeah, well, I've got a bunch of hardware stuff coming up. I've got this new SteelSeries headset too.
He's pointing to it, by the way, literally everybody who doesn't have a video feed of this.
And,
which is everybody but me.
A very cool keyboard that was like a little mob that I think is the greatest keyboard I've ever used, which I'm going to write up tomorrow. So that'll be up soon.
It's pretty high praise then.
It's really nice. As someone that likes to type is a touch typist. Like,
this review is now just fun to write because of the keyboard that I am writing.
The keyboard is... Yeah, all my writing is better because of this keyboard. I don't know if it's the greatest gaming keyboard, but as far as someone that types a lot, it's bloody brilliant.
Oh, that's going to be a push and pull review situation. Yeah.
But yes, I really like this keyboard. So that'll be up soon. Otherwise, the usual stuff. We're doing Indie Watch again. We're doing, all the podcasts and everything else, and we'll have a few more reviews going up soon.
And you're at Huso in the Blue Skies, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah, Huso and Player2AU.
Yeah, I'm at Pretendbeard. The mixtape review I got up as fast as I could, considering the code I think arrived on the same day game dropped. As I mentioned, it was a very weird blur. I do not recommend adding in an additional 8 or 9 hour layover onto an already long flight.
Yeah.
As much as I actually do like it in Korea, especially oh my god. The worst of it was So, Incheon Airport.
Yep.
It's not quite kind of on an island, but it basically takes an hour to get into Seoul proper, but they're it's like a mini Seoul, attached to it. I can go, two or three stops in the train.
Yep.
But having lived there before, I knew the type of shit that I wanted to eat. And I wasted this, because I got in about 8:30. By the time I found one of those, it was 2 minutes before 9. And I still had a sign saying open, but I went to the door and the woman just walked up and flipped on me. everywhere, just clockwork, boom, 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 shut. Sorry, dude, you were eating at the 24-hour fast food restaurant in the airport now, buddy.
Yeah, geez, that's disappointing.